The following presentation is brought to you from the supporters of the Church of the Sovereign God.
Today we're going to continue in our review of the minor prophets of the Old Testament. We've been going through those. We're down to one of the last three of those. The Hebrew title of the book that we're going to look into today is Chagag. And it's interesting because it is interpreted as either festive or festival of Yah, or as we would say, the feast of the Lord. The name Haggai is probably a shortened form of the Hebrew word Haggai. And the name itself is very, very interesting because it is intentionally tied to the prophecies that we see in this prophetic book because of the focus that he gives on the rebuilding of the temple so the feast of the Lord will be able to resume. Some commentaries suggest that the man Haggai may very likely have been born on one of the major feast days of the Lord, but there is no internal evidence within the book itself to support it, and so we really have no information, like I said, to support that that is what the case is. We have to understand that there are times when commentaries take liberties and they make statements that can't back it up out of the book itself. I have no idea where the name came from. In fact, very little is known of the man himself. He is mentioned in the book of Haggai 9 different times, and he is also referred to in the book of Ezra. There are no other references to the man. There are some references in the New Testament to statements made out of the book of Haggai, but no reference to the man himself, other than in these two particular books. He refers to himself simply as the prophet Haggai. Haggai is considered to be the author of the book that bear his name, and what we need to understand from that is there is no contradictions, there are no challenges to that. It is absolutely uncontested by any of the major commentaries or anyone else that whether if he is or is not the author of the book. All scholars are going to consider that Haggai is the author of the book that bear his name. He is not mentioned among the first of the remnant who came out of the Babylonian captivity as being one of those who are part of the first group that comes in. They came back, the first group came in 537 AD, and that's verifiable out of the book of Ezra. Ezra himself was one of those who came out in the third exile, or the third time that people were returned to Jerusalem. It happened over three different times. But in the first one, he is not mentioned. And I'm not going to go there to read this, but you can see this in Ezra chapter 2 and verse 2. And it says, and these are the ones that came with Zerubbabel. And he says, Joshua the high priest was there. And he names several of the people. But Haggai is not mentioned. Now, the reason I mention this point is because, however, we do know that he did return to Jerusalem from the captivity at a later time because by 520 BC, he is in Jerusalem. Now, when I give you dates, I've told you this many times before, and I'll repeat it again, all dates need to be written in pencil, even though I do believe these particular dates that I'm giving you in this book are pretty accurate. Most scholars will go along, will agree with these particular dates. But anyway, like I said, it's a good practice when you're dealing with Bible dates, put them in pencil. Information could come at it sometime. But anyway, but I want you to go down with me to the book of Haggai chapter 1 and verse 1. It says, in the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel the son of Saltiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, who was the high priest, to Joshua the son of Josadak, the high priest. And it says, and so we know by this time that he's there because, like I said, these two men that he is speaking to were part of the first exile, but he is not mentioned. He, Haggai, is not mentioned with Ezra, but he's mentioned in the book of Ezra and other situations. So therefore, I think that we can conclude he was not part of the first group that came back, but he came at some later time, at least by 520, because that is the timing of the writing of the book, and there's a lot of information to see that that's the case. Okay, I want you to go to now with me to Ezra chapter 5. Put a marker there in the book of Haggai. And I'll tell you up front, we're not going to read a significant number of these verses. There's only 38 verses, and sometimes we take and we read every verse out of some of these. Not going to do that. I'm going to give you more of a real overview of it and then draw some conclusions because of the book statements, conclusions that I think are very significant for us. In Ezra chapter 5 and verse 1, then the prophets, Haggai the prophet, and Zechariah the son of Iddo, prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the Lord of Israel, even unto them. Now, like I said, he's writing this, Ezra is writing this now from the Jerusalem area after he had returned from the captivity, and he came in the third group. And so what we see is Zerubbabel comes there, and he is the governor. He's appointed as the governor. Joshua, which is not the Joshua connected with Moses, but Joshua, who is the high priest, he comes, and he's there during the first exile, and they're there for the whole period of time. Then Haggai comes along at a later date, and he is telling the people, and now Ezra later is looking back and saying, these prophets, they spoke to the people, and they told the people certain things, and this is just showing that they are there. Okay, now go to Ezra 6 and verse 14. Ezra 6 and verse 14. And the elders of the Jews build, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they build and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel and according to the commandment of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Now, these three kings are the ones who are responsible. I know God is responsible, we're looking at it from the human point of view. These are the three kings who allowed the exiles, the remnant of the people who had been in captivity, to return to Judah and to Jerusalem, and they happened during these three different kings. Now, we already saw back in Haggai 1, and it says in the second year of Darius. Well, the first king to allow the people to come back was Cyrus. And so now in the days of Darius, and so we know it's a later time, but he's there. Haggai is there. And that's all we're trying to establish here, that Haggai is there, but he didn't come in the first wave, but he came at a later time. This particular prophetic book we know was written at the time of 520 BC. There's a lot of information, like I said, to support that, but you want to put it in pencil. It is one of the most accurately dated books of the entire Bible, Old and New Testament. There are some other books that give a lot of details, but this book is one of the most, if not the most, detailed, accurate dating that can be verified when these particular things, because you can look at them in secular history. So that's where we know that we have some of the dates within at least one year either side of it. And so that's about as close as we can get to when it comes to dating whenever we deal with biblical situations. Therefore, as a result of that, we know that it was, as it says, in the sixth month on the Hebrew calendar, in the month of Elul, E-L-U-L. That is the sixth month, and that is the month that comes just prior to the beginning of the four fall festivals. That's when the book begins to be written, because that's what Haggai 1 verse 1 tells us. And so this is when he's dealing with a lot of these things. There are six different dates that are stated in the book. And these six dates, from them, there's an important characteristic of the book of Haggai as a result of that. And, you know, and part of it is the dating itself. But there's some other information from these six different books in their specific dates, as well as in their link to the reign of a foreign king, Darius. The dates underscore something very important for us. They tell us something very, very important. What they tell us is God is in control over history and over his people. Because God has him to date it exactly when these things took place. Because you have to go back and think about it from the point of view. Israel is gone. They've been in a captivity. They're gone and they're no longer a nation. Judah went into a captivity because of their rebellion against God. They were told they were going to go into a 70-year captivity. They went into a captivity that lasted 70 years. And God told them, he says, and I'm going to bring you out. And so now here is part of this bringing them out and bringing them back to the land, back to the homeland, back to Jerusalem and to the nation of Judah. And so God is dating it through this prophecy, through this prophetic book, Haggai, so that we will know it. We'll know that God has kept his word. God is in charge of history. God is in charge over his people. And so from that, that is a major point that we have to discern and realize out of the book of Haggai. I want to show you the particular verses that show the specific dates. And the first one is in Haggai chapter 1 and verse 1. We just read that one. And it says, in the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, and the first day of the month. Okay, but now go to, still in chapter 1, go to verse 15. Verse 15. And the 24th day of the sixth month, in the second year of Darius the king. And then he goes on and he states, and so, and what that prophecy is, you know, it's there, but he says, here's another dating of it. And so this first dating is the second year in the sixth month and the first day. And now the second dating is the 24th day of the sixth month under Darius. Okay, now let's go to chapter 2. And there are four different verses where dates are listed in chapter 2, because there are only two chapters in the book of Haggai. The first one is in verse 1. This is Haggai 2, verse 1. In the seventh month, in the first and 20th day of the month. Okay, what happens on the 21st day of the seventh month? It's the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles. It's the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, they're not keeping the feast days. But this is still what happened. This is still when this event, when the prophecy came to him, and he dates it. God dates it for him. He tells him, write it down. This is what he does. He does it and tells the date. This is the point. And then he says, came the word of the Lord by the prophet Haggai, saying, and you can read all of these verses, and I do recommend that you read this entire book. It's a quick read. And I think after we go through what we see here today, I think once you read it, that it could mean a great deal more to you and give you even more some understanding, even though, as I said, we're not going to read all of the 38 verses, even though we could, and go verse by verse. It's a way of doing it. I opted not to do that. I did consider that, but that's not the way I wanted to do it. Okay, the second dating in chapter 2 is in verse 10. And the 4th and 20th day of the ninth month, So this is the following month. In the second year of Darius came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet, saying, the next one is in verse 18. Consider now from this day and upward, from the 24th day of the ninth month. So here's another prophecy that's coming in the same month. It's the same day of the month. Even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. In other words, think about this. Verse 20. And again, the word of the Lord came unto Haggai in the 4th and 20th day of the month, saying, in the 24th day of the 9th month, there are several different things that are stated, prophecies. And what we have to understand is, see, we read these books and it is somewhat confusing to us because we don't write like this. We don't read books today that are like this, even though his literary style is very simple, it's very plain, and it's really very straightforward. It's just not the style of books that we tend to read today. What I'm getting at is every time that he says, again in the 24th day, in the 9th month, God came to me and he said such and such. And then and again in the 24th day of the 9th month, he came. Are these different messages? And the answer is yes. Yes, these are different messages. Because, see, we don't receive messages like this from God, or as some people refer to them, as prophetic statements or prophetic downloads. Now, I personally think it'd be really good if we did. We would understand a lot more things, exactly what God is wanting. But he tells us in the words of the Bible and the prophets that he's already used. And then I think what he does is what God does is he gives to us as his people the interpretation, the understanding, because we have the Holy Spirit. As these events become closer and closer to being fulfilled in the spiritual sense, then we begin to see and we begin to be able to interpret them because God is giving us the understanding. But he talked to these prophets, he gave them. And we would have to say it was either through audible voice, even though he didn't speak to most of these prophets in an audible voice. He gave it to them what we would consider as in their mind. And I think a lot of us today would be really bothered if we started receiving information in our mind. But these prophets were set in a way that they understood it. They knew exactly who was giving it to them, and they were not confused, and they did not have any worries about what they were receiving. And so they wrote it down because they were told. Because in the New Testament, we are told the Old Testament, the Scriptures, the Holy Scriptures, and all we had whenever Paul is writing this statement over in Timothy, it is the Old Testament. And he said, it was holy men of God. Paraphrasing, holy men of God wrote them down as the Spirit of God moved them along or gave them the words. They wrote it down. Many times they did not understand what they were writing. They understood the words. They may have understood concepts, but they also understood, I don't understand this. I don't understand this. And we have some prophecy and prophetic statements in some of the prophetic books that tell us that. They say, time out, hold it, I don't know what this is meaning. Daniel is one. And God says, it's okay, just write it down. And at the end of the days when it becomes about when it's going to happen. So we know that most of these prophetic books, they may have been fulfilled in a physical way, but they are prophetic. And in the actuality, if you think about it, because the prophetic spiritual fulfillment is a lot of times much more important than the physical. And so that's what we see even from this little tiny book, the book of Haggai, that there's things that he's telling them to do because God tells them to do them, and the people do it, but it's really about the end time. And that's why these books are so interesting to think about it in that way. But just from a cursory reading of the book, you wouldn't necessarily come up with that. Most people wouldn't. Anyway, let's get back to this. From these dates, we can state that Haggai's ministry, as it is recorded in the Bible, as it is recorded here, from about August, our calendar, from about August to perhaps as late as December. That's how long his ministry is. At least that's all that's recorded. And so it is one of the shortest ministries that we have in the Bible as well. is not only one of the shortest books in the Bible, it's also one of the shortest ministries, because we know nothing else about him, because like we read these verses from Ezra. Ezra is writing about this almost 100 years, not 100 years, but several years later. But he's writing about an event that has already taken place. So he's not writing about it as it's happening now. He's just telling us, oh, and this is what these prophets did and these prophets did, and that's what Ezra's doing. But it already took place. And it took place from about August or so on our calendar to about December as the latest. That's the entire time of this man's ministry. As I said earlier, not much is known about Haggai the man. The book of Haggai is the second shortest book in the Old Testament with only 38 verses. Only Obadiah is shorter with 21 verses. But as I said earlier, his style in writing is very simple and yet very direct, because what he says is exactly what he means to say. And the English interpretation is pretty exact. It doesn't really, you can read different translations. You're not going to get a lot of variation in the wording, because what is stated here from the Hebrew is really pretty straightforward. You can read it and interpret it in any translation, and it might be a word here and there in the verses or in the verses that may be worded a little bit different, but the sense of it is the same. Because there are some other passages and other books that you have to go to another translation than the one you're typically reading, such as, say, the King James Version. You have to go someplace else to get the, what is he really saying? This one doesn't matter. It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty straightforward because it is very simple, very direct. Although the book of Haggai is the second shortest book in the Old Testament, we should not underestimate the power of Haggai's main focus in his message or messages when you really think about it, because he has more than one real message, even though the focus is all one thing. Rebuild the temple, encourage the people so that we can start keeping the holy days. That's really what his message is really about, but he has different messages to get to that place. So he has a role, a responsibility in encouraging the rebuilding of the temple. Even though his short book is such a short book, when you really think about it, when we really consider what Haggai stated and what he actually accomplished through his encouragement, the truth of the matter is Haggai was very successful in packing so much information, so much spiritual common sense, and such a limited number of words. Probably more so than any other book, especially of the Old Testament, and maybe even as much as several of them in the New Testament. It's an interesting book. It's an interesting book. One of the most, I believe, outstanding features of Haggai's prophetic message is his strong awareness that his message or messages, however you want to word that, had their origin from God. He knew that they came from God. And he states it in such a way in the book that he knew that it was from God. This is not about Haggai. There is nothing about the man really spoken about. His focus is on, this is what God told me. And that's what he writes. And so he knew, he was very much aware that his messages, they originated in God. In fact, on 25 different occasions, he declared God's authority for his messages. And no, I'm not going to read you those 25 different times. You can read the book and you can see that. But it would be an interesting thing to do it, to point one after the other after the other. Because out of 38 verses, 25 times out of 38 verses, he declares God's authority. That's a major focus in the book. He gives all the credit, everything. His focus is entirely upon God. It's not about, look at me, I'm this prophet and I'm important. Well, you know, he is important, but he knows where it comes from. He knew that it came from God, and he states it in that particular way. He constantly introduces prophecies with a couple of different wordings, and I'm going to, because it could be worded a little bit different, but it's pretty much in the same way. Many of them are introduced with phrases like, this is what the Lord Almighty said. It would be some variation of that. And then he also concluded them with a very similar focus, a very similar wording, when he would say something like, declares the Lord Almighty. This is what he said, and this is how he concludes it, and this is how God declared it. And it's interesting to read a book that has so much attention to God and what God has said. And unless you're just fascinated with that, you may miss that. But I personally find it's very, very exciting to think about it and someone writing it in this way. To take the focus totally off of self and give it all to God, that's an incredible, it's a beautiful thing. Now, as we read back in chapter 1 and verse 1, it says that it's during the second year, the sixth month, the first day of the month in the reign of Darius. Darius's reign, we know from history, it's Pharaoh Bible from history, that it was from, again, these are about dates, 521, some people say 522, and I told you it'll be 1 year, give or take, of dates that I give you for every date that is in this particular sermon that I'm going to give you. But Darius reigned from about 521 to 486 BC. The prophecies of Haggai can be divided into two major parts. One is chapter 1 and two is chapter 2. I mean, there's only two chapters, and pretty much everything in chapter 1 is one focus. Pretty much everything in chapter 2 is another focus. And those points are, number 1 is the restoration of the temple. That's chapter 1. And number 2 is the sayings or the wording, the oracles, the message, whatever word you'd want to put. And I have the sayings of encouragement of the leadership and of the people, and that's chapter 2. More of the focus in chapter 2 applies to us. But there are statements in chapter 1 that applies to us in the end time also. There are three major themes of this book. One theme is a stirring of both the people and the leaders so the festivals of God could be resumed. Because it said, they'd not been keeping this. Remember, these guys have been in captivity. They've been released. Now, we're going to see in just a moment that the first exile, the first group that came back to the time now that he is writing, there's been a period of time. They've been there for a period of time. And then in Haggai 1, verse 1, it says, and the word of the Lord came to Haggai, and he stirred him up, and he started prophesying. You know, from that time, from the time they got there to the time that Haggai starts writing, there's a period of time, and I'll give you that focus in just a little bit. But so the number one main focus or main theme of the book was a stirring of both the people and the leaders so the festivals could resume. Obviously, the focus is build or rebuild the temple. Get it done. Number two, this is the second main theme, an encouragement to Zerubbabel, who is the governor, and to Joshua, who is the high priest. So he stirs up the people, he encourages the people and the leaders. And the second one is, in a very specific way, he focuses his attention of encouragement to Zerubbabel and to Joshua. And then the third one is there is an exhortation to stop the indifference of the people who were only out looking for themselves. They were just looking out for their own pursuits and their own what they wanted to do, and they were neglecting the rebuilding of the temple. Now I want to state, or maybe even I would put it this way, let me restate a very important lesson. Haggai, probably more than anyone else, was responsible for the resuming of the building and the completion of the temple. Probably more than any other single person. The temple was finished in 516 BC. Now, this prophecy started when? This prophecy took place, this writing took place over about August to December of 520. So it took him still a little bit of time, but he's encouraged the people because they had stopped working on it. And so it was finished in 516 BC, which was 70 years after the destruction of the first temple, or Solomon's temple. It had been destroyed 70 years earlier, and so it's a little bit of, you know, off of that dating, but it's about 70 years. Give you a little bit more information about these, about the last three minor prophets in the order that we have them in our Bible. Haggai being the first one of the last three. It's Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Those are the only three post-exilic prophets. They're the only ones who were after they had been returned. Those are the only three. I mean, because Ezra is not considered as a prophet, you know, if you think about it in that sense. His is more of a historical book. He's not considered as a prophet. He's more of writing it down, telling us what happened. And so the prophets, these three prophets here, are considered as the only three post-exile or after the exile, in other words, after they had returned, of the prophets, of all of the prophets. These prophets, all three of them, spoke to the returned remnant of the people. And I'll get to in just a second here as to why that's significant to the book of Haggai. These prophets, these three men, and as we later cover these other two individually at a later time, we'll probably restate some of these very things. But since Haggai is the first one of these latter three ones here, we'll do this now. But these prophets had the objective to encourage the remnant who had returned to Jerusalem, and their objective was to encourage the people in both their moral and in their spiritual life. I mean, whenever you think about it, it's an interesting thing to consider because, after all, these people are the people of God. They had been in captivity. Some of them had been alive when the captivity started some 70 years earlier. Some of them were born in captivity. And now they've been released, and now they're come back to the Jerusalem and to the land of Judah. And so here they are, and they are to encourage to do what it is now God is wanting them to do. They are out of captivity. Now what does God want you to do? And so these three prophets are doing that. And they had returned to the homeland. And those that had returned, these remnant, as it says in the books, are to undertake the challenge of rebuilding the now destroyed temple of God and to rebuild the decimated nation of Judah. When they returned, it wasn't just letting them out of a jail and okay, 70 years is up, you're free. They were taken to there by these different kings for this purpose. I mean, that's what you have to understand. They didn't just say, okay, now we're free, we can go wherever. Because what you see is from other books is they didn't all return. And I think it's pretty clear that most of them didn't want to return. And some of them were apparently not allowed to return. Because I think these people, even though the Jews had been in captivity and they were now freed, they didn't own the land of Judah or Israel or Jerusalem. These Persian kings still occupied it. They still owned it. And so once they allowed exiles to go back, remnants to go back, they were going back there for that purpose, to rebuild the land and to rebuild the temple. And so they're there, and they're there for this purpose. And so all three of these particular latter prophets are showing us that. In fact, I think that it is pretty accurate to state that Haggai and Zechariah dealt mainly with the spiritual needs of the people as they related to the rebuilding of the temple. Like I said, Haggai's purpose is rebuild the temple so that we can focus on the holy days, the festivals of God. I mean, that's what his name means. And so he's living up to his word, living up to his name. And that's why that's his main focus. And we'll see when we study Zechariah, that's a lot of what his focus is to rebuild the temple, the spiritual life of these people who had returned. While on the other hand, Malachi, he dealt primarily with the moral and the social needs involved with the reconstruction of the nation of Judah itself. He focuses more on Judah and the restoration there, and the first two, Haggai and Zechariah, dealt more with the spiritual life, the spiritual issues, get the temple rebuilt so that we can get back into worshiping with God the way God would want us to do. And we'll see that, as I said, when we go through those others. Now, as a point of history, under the policies of Cyrus the Great, the king of Persia, who was the first Persian king to allow the exiles to come back. Okay. He allowed about an estimated 50,000 Jews to return to Jerusalem. Let's go to Ezra chapter 1, because this is where we get some of that information. He didn't say it's 50,000, but through secular history, you can see that it's there. Cyrus the Great is a person out of history. And in secular information shows some of this. We don't have all these details out of the Bible. We have a lot of them. But go to Ezra chapter 1 and verse 2. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that King Cyrus, made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying. So this came from God. He stirred up Cyrus. This wasn't out of the goodness of his heart, but God, I'm sure, had, it says, stirred up the spirit, and I'm sure that he turned his heart to be obliged to do these things. God turned his heart in that way. In verse 2, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Now, there had been one there, but it had been destroyed 70 years earlier. And so he's saying, Cyrus is saying, the God of heaven told me to build this house to him in Judah. I find this interesting how God controls even the minds of pagan kings. And this is what we're seeing here. Verse 3, who is there among you of all his people? In other words, which one of you are of the people of God? In other words, how many here are Jews? I mean, that's what he's asking. Let's just put it in real simple everyday terms. This is what he's saying here. Who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Lord God of Israel. He is the God which is in Jerusalem. Now, these are the words that Ezra are recording that are statements made by Cyrus, the king of Persia. Do you think God's hand is not involved in all of this? Of course God's hand is involved in every bit of this. Verse 4. And whosoever remains in any place where he sojourns, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold and with goods and with beasts, beside the freewill offering from the house of God that is in Jerusalem. Now let's go to Isaiah 44 and verse 28. And I'm going to read this out of the New American Standard Bible. Verse 28. It is I who says of Cyrus, this is God speaking, he is my shepherd, and he will perform all my desire. This is God speaking about Cyrus. And he declares of Jerusalem, she will be built, and of the temple your foundation will be laid. So Cyrus made this decree to make it so. And so he allows around 50,000 Jews to return to Judah and to Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. And this occurred about 538 BC. Ezra also, I'm not going to read these particular verses, but I give you the reference. Ezra also tells us that the Levitical systems, the sacrificial systems, were reinstated, and they were reinstated on rebuilt altars for burnt offerings. That's in chapter 3. This is Ezra chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. And Ezra also tells us that in the second year of their return, the foundation of the temple was laid. And that's in Ezra chapter 3, verse 8 through 13, and Ezra 5, verse 16. However, and you know, oh no, there's coming a however, or but, and you know something bad's about to happen. And the answer is, yeah, something bad happened. So this is in 538 BC. They were allowed to come back. Now, when did the Spirit of the Lord stir up Haggai? Haggai 1, verse 1, about 520. So we're talking about there's a period of time. There's like 16, 17, 18 years since the first group have come back. So what happens is, because of there is harassment or harassment, however you would pronounce it, from the Samaritans, and eventually even there was pressure from the Persians, the work to rebuild the temple was brought to a dead stop. And so they quit building because there were all these pressures. And so they stopped. And as a result, along with spiritual laziness and because of being uncertain exactly what to do, boredom set in. And so the people who were now back there in Jerusalem and Judah, who were sent there for the purpose, you remember Cyrus said, I'm sending these people there because God told me to rebuild and to build the temple in the city of Jerusalem. And so he sends them over there. Now this is about 16 or so years later. And during the meantime, it had stopped being built. And so it's just there. This is the context of where we are when we see all of this. And so, as a result, along because of their spiritual being lazy, it completely stopped. It completely stopped. And for about 16 years, until the rule of the Persian king Darius, which was around 521 to 486 BC, already gave you that date, the restoration or the rebuilding of the temple was completely stopped or discontinued for 16 years. There was nothing going on with the rebuilding of the temple of God. Then in the second year, Haggai 1, Remember, that's where we read Haggai 1 in verse 1. In the second year of King Darius, which would be around 520 BC, God raised up Haggai to encourage the people to rebuild the temple. You can also see that in Ezra chapter 5 in verse 1 and 2, and then in Haggai 1 in verse 1. We've read those. As Haggai tells us in his first message, in Haggai 1 in verse 1, Haggai tells us that his very first message was given on the first day of the sixth month, August, September, on our calendar, in the second year of Darius, which would be around 520 BC. This is what he tells us. He wrote this to encourage and to exhort those who had returned to Judah from way back when. From way back when. You know, they had been brought there in 538 BC, and this is now 520. And so they worked on it for a short period of time. The Samaritans came in and they hassled them, and then even by this time, the Persians are giving them some hassle. And so they stopped. They just simply quit. And now in 520, a new king is there. As it says, it's the second year of Darius. Darius is now being moved by God along to, I want you to build the temple in Jerusalem. And so God focuses his attention on Darius the king. And so he now says, okay, this is what I want you to do. And so God is now using this prophet Haggai. And so in the process of doing this, Haggai taught, or he focused his messages on three major points. Now, I know I've given you already some three different things, you know, major focuses of the book. These are three major points, and it's a little bit different, but we still see this from the book. And so I want to give you these three points, because now we're getting more closer and closer now to where it really is talking to us. Yes, he's talking to those people back there, but he's really talking to us. And the first point is, God blesses his people when they put God first. And it's so true. And it's the message that was given back there, and it pertains to us today. And you know, it's interesting because we have to keep hearing it. Maybe there's spiritual laziness, or not exactly certain what to do, and maybe boredom has entered in even with us. And so we don't put God always first, or we don't know how to put God first, or whatever it is that we would state. And so the first thing that we see, a major thing that we see out of this book of Haggai is God blesses his people when they put him first. Number two, we should not grow weary in our service of the Lord God. What do you mean there's the Samaritans are out here attacking us and they're harassing us, and the Persians, even the ones who let us come over here, they're even now giving us some bad times. And I think a question that we have to stand and ask ourselves is, what difference does any of this make? Either God is God or he's not, and he is, and we know it, and we're going to declare God is God, and we're going to obey him first, no matter what happens. And that's a lesson that we get out of this book, this little 38-verse book. God has to be first, and we have to put him first no matter what happens. Do not grow weary in doing the service of God. And number three, God's promises. Oh, you mean out of the book we actually see that God has promised some things? We see some promises of things. And so the third thing is God's promises for tomorrow become the foundation for our confidence for today. Because of what God has promised he's going to do, that gives us the confidence to do what we need to do today. Does this make sense in our lives today as Christians, as part of the church? Of course it does. and go, oh, yeah, I need to hear this. I need to hear this. I need to know this. And we step back and go, yeah, I know this. I know this. But we need to hear this, brethren. We need to hear these kind of things like this from time to time to stir us up. Exactly what the book of Haggai did for those people back there so that they could finish the rebuilding of a physical temple. Did they get it done? Yeah, they got it done. But not after a lot of different hassles and giving in and not and having to be encouraged and encouraged and encouraged. Same thing with us. Same thing with us. There's a very important word or term. I'm using that word term with intent to consider from the book of Haggai, and it's the term house. The word or the term house. The word is repeated numerous times, and as it is used in so many repetitions in the book, it is used in relation to the temple. What it does is it focuses our attention on the reconstruction of the temple as the key focus of the book. Now, when we know prophetic books are, yes, going to tell us something from history that took place, it either did what God wanted them to do or they didn't do what God wanted. It's an either or. But we know when they are prophetic books, we know that they are lessons that come all the way down to us today. And perhaps even the main focus of these books are not so much even for them. Yes, it was for them, but it is more so for us because it is in a spiritual way. And that's the point. And it is the key focus of the book. Haggai chapter 1 and verse 2. Thus speaks the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. And God is saying, hold it, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You've been here, you were sent here by a Persian king because I stirred up his spirit to send you back. And so he sends back 18 years ago, 50,000 of you for the purpose of rebuilding Jerusalem and rebuilding Judah and rebuilding the temple. And you've not done it because you say now's not the time. Because when this is stated, it's 16, 17, 18 years after the fact. And this is what is saying, and they're saying, it's not time. So from that, knowing that so much of this is prophetic for us, a question that I think that we obviously need to ask is what is God's house today? The church. The church. So here let me point out what I consider to be the key verses of this book. I said we're not going to read them all. We're going to read several. But I believe these to be the key verses of the book. And you have to read chapter 1 and verse 1 because that sets it up and tells you the setting of it or the timing of it. In verse 2, it tells you God is saying, the people are telling me, now's not the time to work on the house of the Lord. Now here's where we get into where the real focus important verses are. Verse 7. This is chapter 1 and verse 7. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. He says, work on the house of God. Get involved. Get it done. And from that, I, God, am going to take pleasure in it. And I will be glorified as a result of it. Chapter 1 and verse 14. Now, like I said, you read all of these verses in between because they're explaining a little bit different details and things like that. But here's the real focus of the verses. Verse 14. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Saltiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Josadok, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people, and they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God. So they had told God, now it's not the time. And so God stirred up the spirit of the leader, the governor, and the high priest, and all the people. And what we have, and what we see is this was done through the words that are done through Haggai the prophet, because he's out there among the people telling them what God told him. Like I said, all these times he says, thus saith the Lord, and declared the Lord. And this is what he's doing through all of these verses. And this is what the result of it is. Okay, now let's go to chapter 2. Haggai 2 and verse 6, we begin. But thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land. And I will shake all nations, for the desire of all nations shall come. And I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. The silver is mine. This is verse 8. I'm just reading verse 6. I'm going to read 6 through verse 9. In verse 8, the silver is mine and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. Verse 9, the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith the Lord of hosts. And in this place will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. Now, if you just stop and think about it, they rebuilt it. You know, I said, did the people do their job? Yeah, they rebuilt the temple. Was it as grandeur as the Solomon's temple? No way. No way. No way. But what did God just say? Rebuild this house, and it's going to be more glorious than the original one. Was it? Not in a physical way. Drop down to verse 22. And I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. That is one of the, these are the, I consider to be the key verses out of this particular book. You read all the rest, I don't mean to put them down, the wording, but I would read it this way. These are the key verses. All the rest is filler, but you got to have all the filler to really be able to understand these verses. But I think these are the key things. What we are seeing here is a prophecy of the messianic nature. You may want to use the word the messianic character, what it's going to be like, the nature with regard to the future glory of the temple, and that is the church. What he's describing to them is, yeah, you're going to go rebuild this building because I want you to do it. And you're going to build it. It's going to be fine. It's going to be great. In fact, Jesus Christ is going to return, and he's going to come. And then Herod comes along, and he does some things to it and all of that. I mean, you know, but Jesus Christ comes to this latter temple. But what happens to this later temple that Jesus Christ comes to? It was destroyed. It's never been rebuilt. Never been rebuilt. Yet this is a prophecy, obviously, for the end time. And so what he is describing is not this physical building. He is describing the church of God. He is talking about where we are here today. And so what, as I said, we are seeing a prophecy about the messianic nature that is going to take place in the future with the glory that's going to come to the church of God. Jesus, the Messiah, is portrayed in these verses, verses 7 through 9. We read them, we could read them again, but he is portrayed here as the restorer of the temple's glory. That's in verse 7 through 9. We read them. And he is portrayed here as the overthrower of the kingdoms of the world, which is here in verse 22, because he says, and I will overthrow. He's the overthrower of all of these things associated with the world. And this is what we see here. Let's go back to Haggai chapter 2 and verse 1. I started in verse 6, but I want to go back and read some of this filler information that I told you that I would call these. But let's see this. In verse 1, in the seventh month and the 1 20th day of the month, came the word of the Lord by the prophet Haggai, saying, speak now to Zerubbabel and to Joshua the high priest, and to the residue of the people, saying, who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? Now, apparently, Haggai had. And so there are some people, obviously, who were standing there by this time that had been there, that had seen the original house, had seen Solomon's temple. I mean, this is what would have been inferred by the asking of the question. And how do you see it now? Not how do you see the first one, it's how do you see the house now? What do you, you know, you compare that one to this one, and what do you see? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? There's no comparison to the first, to the one that they built. This is what it's saying. This is what we're being told. This is what we understand. Yet, however, be you strong, O Zerubbabel, saith the Lord, and be strong, O Joshua, the high priest, and be strong, all you people of the land, saith the Lord, and work. For I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts, according to the words that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt. How many of us came out of Egypt? All of us. All of us. So my spirit remains among you, fear you not. What have you got to be fearful of? The answer is nothing. Nothing. Now reading verse 6, which we read earlier. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. Again, what we need to realize is this prophetic book is for us today, the church. So yeah, we need to read it. You need to read all the details. You need all of the stuff, all the filler. Now that you have the important verses and the key points out of it, I think now it will make more sense when you read it with the idea in mind. This is just talking about me, us. This is what this is describing. Brethren, here is an important principle for us to consider as it applies to us as the Church of God today. God takes small, imperfect things like us. Because that house was imperfect. Compared to the first one, it's like it's nothing. So God takes small, imperfect things like us, and he builds them into a habitation for his glory. That's what he tells us out of the book of Haggai. This is the point that he's getting to. He said that he would shake both heaven and earth to fill our labor with splendor. That's what he says, verses 6 through 7. That's what he's saying. This is what he's telling us. Therefore, brethren, we cannot stop. We cannot quit working on the temple. We cannot be focusing on ourselves. We must be focusing on our labor of love for God. We are doing this to glorify God. And here is the point. When you really analyze it all, the entirety of this book and this whole principle, the work that is done in God's name is not too small for God to receive glory. No work that we would do in the name of God, doing it God's way, of course, no work that we would do in God's name is too small for God to receive glory. Do all to the glory of God. The Aaronic blessing. I hope this hits you today with the Aaronic blessing, with what we're seeing here and how this fits, how this Aaronic blessing fits with us today. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. God bless each one of you, brethren. God bless you and all that we do to glorify God.
For more information or answers to your Bible questions, please contact the Church of the Sovereign God. Our website is www.cotsg.org. That's www.cotsg.org. Or you may write to us at Post Office Box 89111. That's Post Office Box 89111, Tampa, Florida 33689.